In the second episode of Bauma Talk, we welcome Riccardo Viaggi, Secretary General at CC, the Committee for European Construction Equipment, and Domenico Campogrande, Director General at FIEC, the European Construction Industry Federation. Together, we explore ways to reach climate neutrality as an industry, and in this context, we talk about challenges, chances, and strategies.
Bauma Talk. Insights into the construction machinery industry.
Hello and welcome to round two of Bauma Talk, ladies and gentlemen. Today we are back with a buzzing topic, climate neutrality. The European Green Deal states that Europe's economy and society will be climate neutral by 2050. That means we have set ourselves some quite ambitious goals. Now we need to reach them, easier said than done, especially for the construction machinery industry, which relies on powerful fuels like diesel. Luckily, we have experts that can guide us along the way. I'm happy to welcome two of them today, Domenico Campogrande and Riccardo Viaggi. It's my pleasure, gentlemen. Great to have you with us today.
Hello.
Thank you for having us.
So to kick off the topic, let's start with a few questions that reflect your personal view on climate neutrality. I suggest, Domenico, we start at first. Is there one sustainable practice that you've observed in your daily work that is worth sharing, that maybe you could give as a guidance to others?
Yes, sure. First of all, I would like to point out that when we talk about sustainability, it's not only about environmental issues, it's about economic, it's about social and environment as well, although nowadays it's almost connected to environment. This is the first point. The second point, what is important is to know also that construction companies that we represent via organization have already started their path towards carbon neutrality. One example that I can mention here is the company from our president from Italy. It's a medium-sized company, but they have done a study about their positioning today, about the path that they need to take towards 2050. And on that basis, they have started to use to change their machine. They have changed the supply of energy from suppliers who provide green energy, but they have also taken measures at corporate level. For example, in their canteen, they are providing food to their workers, food coming from 0 kilometers around the company. They have also started some international cooperation with support to training outside in Africa, in particular in Sudan. So just to show that sustainability is a wide-ranging topic, and construction companies are already quite active in this respect.
Yeah, and it's very important to have every area on mind if you think about that. So they are on the way and they have a good navigation, as you've said. Riccardo, what's been your most significant insight into sustainability in the construction industry so far?
I would like to point to what Domenico already said. The sustainability has three pillars: environmental, social, and economic. For me, that means, and my most important insight into this is that if it makes no sense or little sense economically, it will not be sustainable. Sometimes we see some of the recipes that make it maybe environmentally sustainable, maybe socially sustainable, but makes little sense economically. That doesn't make it sustainable. And that's something that we as European trade associations often have to remember when we speak to policymakers, legislators, because again, it can only fly if it has three legs. It may be counterintuitive, but it can only make sense if it has all the three legs of sustainability. And economic sustainability is not always considered. That's my most important insight.
Okay, so one doesn't go without the other. Everything is pretty much connected. Domenico, if you had to describe the future of the construction industry in one sentence related to climate neutrality, what would it be?
I would even use less than a sentence, just two words, which would be a contrasted future. Contrasted because all the environmental policies have brought huge opportunities to the sector in terms of renovation of housing, but also smart mobility, so investment in infrastructure. Now we have at European level also the water resilience strategy. So very wide range of new markets, new opportunities for companies, but on the other side, also huge challenges and concerns. For example, the first one is certainly the lack of labor. Companies have difficulties in finding workers with the right skills, the right competences, but also who is going to pay for all this? The financing part is certainly one of the big concerns that we have. And on top of that, we have all the environmental policies have brought also additional regulation, which is coming on the shoulders of companies, especially problematic for small companies. So this is a little bit the picture that we have in front of us, but I guess we will discuss these issues also a bit in more detail during the discussion later.
Absolutely. That was a perfect introduction into our agenda today, because we will dive deeper, as you've said, in those topics. Ricardo, in your view, what's one trend that will shape the future of sustainable construction in the next 5 years? Let's take this period of time.
If I had to single out one trend, I think it would be client demand for carbon neutral solutions. And again, it may be counterintuitive because we have lots of regulations, but what we are seeing as the one single trend, most of all as machinery manufacturers, which CC represents, is the client demand that's driving it. And that's, going back to my first remarks, that's good because that's sustainable when there is a real client demand that's sustainable. So I would definitely point to client demand for carbon neutral solutions.
But that means we need a change pretty much everywhere. So thank you for sharing these initial thoughts with us. That was a good start indeed. I guess with this, we've already covered a few aspects of the topic. The construction machinery industry is without a doubt a key sector when it comes to achieving climate neutrality on a global level. In the future, it will be all about making the right decisions to shape this massive transition. And both companies and thought leaders will be called upon to make this happen. So let's take a look at the specific challenges you just mentioned. I mean, at least here in Germany and probably on the European level as well, that many companies are struggling with regulatory requirements that complicate their operation. What challenges are they facing in particular?
Indeed, in the last 5 years, we have seen really very strong activity, legislative activities by the European institutions, in particular in the environmental field. And it's important to have a framework. It's important to have a clear framework, but it's important also to have a framework which is not just nice on paper, but it's a framework that works and that allows companies and the economy to run smoothly. And this is where we have some difficulties. Is that in shaping all this legislation, the European institutions, in their willingness to have an open and transparent procedure, they invited, of course, around the table any kind of stakeholders, and which makes it difficult sometimes in the discussion to find the right balance between the ambition that we need to go towards carbon neutrality, but at the same time to take into account the economic aspect, the reality on the field. And this is where we have had a little bit of difficulties in the last years. Now, we will see what the new commission will do, but we really want the next legislator to be a legislator of implementation. So we have a framework, we need to implement it, and we need to provide good feedback to the institutions about possible problems, what works, what does not work, so that this legislation can also be adapted whenever needed. And in this respect, I think what is contained in the Draghi report, which you probably heard about and which will also help shaping the agenda of the next commission, contains a lot of positive elements in this, in terms of competitiveness, mm-hmm. in terms of simplification. So we are certainly going to work on that. As regards the exposure, I would say, of construction companies, I have to say that construction is a particular activity because it's still remains mainly a local activity. So maybe less exposed mm-hmm. to international competition compared to automobile or other sectors. Nevertheless, we see companies from outside the EU entering the EU market, and we have to ensure a level playing field because, of course, European companies have to respect the European legislation. And we have to ensure that this is also the case, at least for the companies that are coming on the EU market. And also when European companies are going outside the EU, they shouldn't be put in a competitive disadvantage because of all the legislation that we have in the EU.
Ricardo, where do you see the greatest restrictions and what is needed to find the right balance? As Domenico said, there is a lack of a balance now. So what's the best approach in this context?
I would point to the inconsistency that a lot of legislation produces. This legislative hyperactivism that we have had in the last 5 years has actually brought a lot of inconsistencies. There are certain regulations at EU level which are indeed counterproductive when we consider other objectives of the EU. And in general, legislation that is really counterproductive to EU competitiveness on the global scale, because I agree with the many construction activities, but it's almost exactly the opposite when it comes to construction machinery. Construction machinery manufacturers compete on a global scale with other regions of the world where legislation, when it exists, is a bit more consistent and in many cases is not as restrictive as legislation that has been produced at the EU level. So the right attitude towards this is to definitely push the next European Commission to a more implementation role. That's also what we as CECE definitely believe. But we also think and we're also going to call for certain at least reconsiderations of some of the legislation that has been produced in the last 5 years, and maybe a remodeling, a retargeting of certain legislative obligations. Certainly when it comes to reporting requirements, because regulation is one thing, the obligations of European companies in reporting how they have fulfilled legislation is an additional burden. And sometimes it's an additional burden which is duplicated at the European and national level. Sometimes it's an obligation which is duplicated between the controlling authorities and also in regards to clients. So those reporting requirements, which have completely exploded in the last 5 years, are making our industry also less competitive on the global level. So understanding that this is a problem, making politicians understand that this is a problem, is the first necessary step in trying to address this.
Yeah, especially when we talk about another burden that are the strict emission standards. I mean, how can these be met in the long run, and what are the biggest challenges in doing so?
This is certainly a big issue, and from a construction company perspective, I mean, we have to take into account the construction process is a complex process. There is not one-size-fits-all solution, which means that also in terms of technology, we cannot say it's only electric, it's only diesel, it's only this. So we need to find the right mix, the right technology, according to the needs of the moment and of the situation. Some work sites take place in completely isolated areas. So also there, what do you do? How do you, can you comply with the emission standards in this situation? So what is important, I think, for companies, at least construction companies, is a legislative framework which is clear, stable, and implementable. Companies need to be able to plan their strategies, their investment in advance. And only in this respect, if this is applied, then they can also comply with the requirements in terms of emission. So here, I mean, we are not talking just about buying a screwdriver or a shovel. We are talking about very expensive machines, especially for SMEs. These are big burden and they need to be planified well in advance.
And we're talking about high technical requirements in this context. So as you said, it needs a really clear guidance here to get a good navigation for all the players who are taking part in that business. And you just named it, everything will require significant investment. So how can company be best supported in this effort, especially by the EU, Ricardo?
Especially by the EU and up to a certain level, including public financial support. And that is something Domenico has already mentioned. The Draghi report definitely highlights the need for substantial European level public investment. the figure that former President Draghi puts on the table is 800 billion euros per year of needed additional investment. Not all public, of course, some of it have to come from the private side, but the EU side needs to support the climate neutral transition by investing publicly into this. And unfortunately, the comparison with the US is showing how much ground we need to cover on public investment. Of course, with the recent US election, we don't know what is going to happen to very important initiatives like the Inflation Reduction Act, which has been attracting investment by even European companies into the US because of very, very incentive conditions that are made possible by public investments. And those investments are necessary for R&D, for creation of new production capabilities, and they should be geared toward attracting new companies or existing companies into the sector to deliver those climate neutral solutions. So it is definitely something which cannot only be driven by regulation. In fact, the EU has general strict emission standards. The Green Deal was already referred to as a 2050 objective, but specifically for construction machinery, there is no standard for greenhouse gas emissions, CO2 emissions. And so the industry is going there on its own, but it needs support on how to get there and not the decision of which technology is to be used on getting there.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about another piece of the puzzle if it comes to climate neutrality, and that are supply chains. Achieving climate neutrality here demands a high level of transparency. What should companies be aware of in this context?
Go ahead, Ricardo.
Well, indeed, the construction machinery industry often relies on very complex global supply chains. I believe in this. What is also one of the most relevant challenges to understand the changes in the supply chains, because, of course, when you develop completely new machinery, battery electric or hydrogen powered or hybrid machinery, you're definitely going to need new components. And new components may be developed by companies which were not your suppliers before. That requires setting up of new supply chains, that requires setting up new partnerships. And I strongly believe that partnership is becoming a more and more important word in the climate neutrality transition. So those supply chains may take time to be set up. You need trust from your suppliers, most of all if they are key suppliers, like, for example, suppliers of battery cells or hydrogen fuel cells or completely new electrified powertrains. And those are very, very important components. They're not minor components in a zero emission machinery. And those supply chains, they are also put to the stress by geopolitical considerations, like the idea of putting your suppliers closer to you geographically and also, say, politically. And when we hear talks about a global decoupling and, let's say, a scaling back of globalizations of the supply chains, this is also something that we need to take into account, and our member companies are taking into account when they diversify the suppliers.
Domenico, from your point of view, what are the most important steps to achieve the necessary transparency? We heard trust is one buzzword here.
If you allow me, please, to say a few words also to your previous question regarding the financing and the investment, because nowadays we're in a situation where green products, clean products, or machine, whatever they are more expensive than traditional ones, which means that in the end product, more sustainable product is more expensive than the traditional one. So there is a gap indeed that needs to be fulfilled between sustainable green solution and the traditional ones. And as Ricardo's mentioned, there will need to be a mix of public and private financing. Nowadays at European level, we hear a lot push towards offsite construction, industrialization, modular construction, with the argument of saying this will increase productivity and thereby reducing cost. It's certainly one element of the equation, but not the only one. We should not forget, as we said before, also all the administrative burden that is pushing also the costs higher. So higher permitting, the difficulty in finding land where to build as well. So these are all elements that need to be taken into account when we talk about investment and about financing. Now, if you go back indeed on your question about the supply chain, there is clearly a need for a better integration of all the supply chain in the construction process, from the design phase to the construction process itself, the choice of products, the choice of machines. And in this respect, digitalization can help a lot. This is something where we need to increase our investment to go much further than what we are today. And in terms also of transparency, traceability, there have been also in this area legislation. If I look at the Corporate Social Responsibility Directive or the Corporate Due Diligence Directive, also which aim at all the transparency in the supply chains, these are nice pieces of legislation, but which is the impact on contractors? It's extremely difficult to apply them in the construction supply chains, and they are extremely heavy, as Ricardo mentioned earlier, in terms of reporting requirements. And the officials at the EU institutions, they tell us, oh, don't worry, it's only for large companies. But we say, no, that's wrong, because when a smaller company wants to work as a subcontractor for a larger one, the larger one imposes the same reporting requirements that the company has to do also on the small one. So in the end, it is a big burden. So it's good, again, to have tools, legislation that allow transparency, traceability, and everything, but not at the expense of competitiveness of the companies.
Mm-hmm. Let's move on to another topic that could be another approach if we are talking about climate neutrality. Another important factor is the durability of the machines. What is needed to extend their life cycle? This could be another idea. And what other aspects should be considered when it comes to a long lifetime?
I would start by saying that generally construction machinery is a long-lasting product. We know of machines that works for years and years and years, maybe even decades. What is challenging is that when technology as new, in certain cases as unstable as the key technologies that we are now developing for climate neutrality, they're less known. And by being less known, we don't know their evolution over time. We don't know the productivity of a battery pack 8, 10, 12, 15 years down the line. This is why our member companies are taking all, let's say, the chances on their side with, as I said, supply chain partners, which become real partners that propose extended warranties, guarantees on the durability of the battery pack. But it's really important to extend the life cycle of those key technologies that are onboarded on machines in a completely new way. They were not before, and they are now, which can actually put into question the durability of the machines, which are otherwise some of the most durable industrial installations. Again, machinery can be used for decades. But with these new technologies that are onboarded nowadays, we don't know the revolution over a long time. And that is mostly a challenge. When we will master all this, it will probably become an opportunity. But for the moment, it's mostly a challenge.
So that means if we're talking about batteries, for example, that they are not as sustainable as they should be, maybe in the long run, if you say we still don't have many studies on that because we don't have this experience so far.
Indeed, that's exactly what I'm saying. We are not yet 100% certain on the life cycle analysis and the life cycle costs of battery packs, of when, how they are made, the raw materials that go in them, and then their durability, their productivity in a long time span, which is the long time span that we are used with the construction machinery that can be used, as I said, for decades.
So now we've identified a few challenges. Let's focus on the opportunities they bring. Can you explain where you see the biggest potential to leverage for companies? Talking about those opportunities, and that's a much nicer subject area, to be honest. Domenico.
Yes, I mean, we are one of the few sectors, probably at European level, which did not complain too much about the Green Deal and all the environmental policies, as I said, because they offer huge opportunities. And Another aspect that we haven't mentioned so far is that we are still a sector with a bad reputation, bad image. If I'm thinking about young people or women trying to or wanting to join the construction industry, we are still far behind. We need to progress on that. And we are convinced that all the green policies and the digital transition are really two important elements to change this image, to show that construction is not just putting one brick over the other, but that it's also about providing solutions to our climate change, to our environmental concerns. It's also a way for young people to go on a worksite and fly a drone or pilot a robot instead of putting one brick on the other. So we have to use and we have to take these opportunities also to change the image that we have as a sector, because we need labor force. As I mentioned at the beginning, we have opportunities, but we need also those people who are able to deliver and provide. And this is where I think the green and digital transition are extremely good opportunities. Of course, another element is that the problem of financing and the pressure on costs is a problem, but at the same time, it can also be an incentive for companies to be more innovative, to look for alternative solutions, to invest in research and development. So it can be a positive element also in this respect.
And Ricardo Bauma contributes to that. There's an initiative called Think Big. So that means that young people are attracted by an area and then they can find out and get to know more about this changing job profile. So you've experienced that at the last Bauma probably as well. That's a big chance, isn't it?
Yes, indeed. Indeed. The opportunity created by a climate neutral industry and an industry that can deliver climate neutrality like construction, I definitely agree with what Domenico said, makes the sector more attractive. It really helps building the reputation of the industry, of the construction industry, as part of the solution and not part of the problem. And I believe that Think Big, a very important program supported by Bauma and VDMA, definitely helps building that reputation towards kids, younger children, the younger generation, also on how they could select their career and they could think about a sector that really can bring a shift, and the climate neutral shift is the most important shift that we have in front of us, a shift that is badly needed when we think about the tragic impacts of the climate change, of the climate crisis that we see on everyday life with floods, earthquakes, or fires. This is definitely something that we believe the industry can become a force for change. So that's something which we really believe is an opportunity.
Talking about change and opportunities, there's another aspect I would like to bring in. Those are rental and leasing options. I mean, how much potential lies in that if we think this topic?
Well, we do see rental and leasing as options which are coming more and more to the front. As already said, some of these investments require more money than was usually considered. And so financial options which allow you to spread over certain costs, which really allow you to instead of consider the purchase a cost but really an investment, and really take into account the longer term approach with the total cost of ownership rather than the price tag at the very beginning, those are definitely financial solutions which help the transition become more affordable for construction companies.
And if I may add something also to this aspect from a customer perspective, it allows also the flexibility that is needed to follow the change, legislative changes and technical ones. We mentioned we don't know where hydrogen solution will bring. We don't know where electric will bring. So it allows a company also to have more flexibility in adapting itself to these changes, whether technological or legislative.
Yeah, and as you've said, I mean, you've already talked about the costs, and this is often said. I mean, sustainable actions are costly. Maybe again, Ricardo, from your point of view, what counter arguments exist to challenge this viewpoint? Domenico already talked about this, but to wrap it up one more time.
I think that the most important shift that we have to make is really from a cost and price tag point of view to a total cost of ownership. This is definitely what our member companies, the machinery manufacturers, always explain. A machine which is less emitting, which onboards very new technology, will have a higher price tag, but it will be a machine that will need less maintenance, will need less mechanical intervention, will break down less often, will increase productivity. So those are really all the angles which make the total cost of ownership, the TCO, for those that like acronyms, make that much more worthy of considerations for clients, for machinery users. And those are definitely the opportunities that we have to communicate about much more often.
So the advantages and benefits are clear to see. To sum it up, there are significant challenges, also opportunities. That's the good news. Let's talk about and focus on effective approaches to achieve climate neutrality. What do you see as the most impactful strategies in this context, Domenico?
As we mentioned earlier in the discussion, it's a complex path towards sustainability. So it needs to take into account many different areas. I have in mind certainly research and innovation. I have in mind digitalization. We mentioned also better and stronger integration of the whole construction supply chain from design to the end user. But we also need to work a lot on public procurement, because this is one important tool to foster the implementation of sustainable solution, to bridge the gap between more greener, more sustainable solution compared to traditional ones. So public procurement will be certainly an important area. And we need also to work a lot on the feedback to the institutions about the existing legislation. Does it work? Does it really provide the added value that we thought at the beginning? Or are the things that need to be changed correct? So our role as a European organization in the next years will be also this feedback to the EU institutions. And lastly, we need certainly to invest a lot on training, education, upskilling, reskilling, because, as I said, we lack the right profiles, lack the right competences, we lack people, and technology evolves very, very rapidly. So we need the people to be able to follow this, and the companies to have the right people.
And Ricardo, in this context, do we need more collaboration and partnership as well? How important is that?
Yes, indeed. I mentioned it already. It is, if not the most silver bullet, it is one of the most important things. We need to collaborate. And collaboration takes a lot of forms. This climate neutrality transition is a lot about innovation. So collaboration in R&D, for example, is fundamental for machinery manufacturers to collaborate with universities and research centers on the one hand, but also public authorities on the other hand, to know what type of, for example, legislative changes can be done, what type of public procurement support can be offered. In other areas, it's about also collaboration between a machinery manufacturer and its client base. Some of our largest and most innovative manufacturing members have started already partnering with some of their clients to pilot test some of those most innovative machines. Some were maybe even only not ready for the market, and they are given to client to test them, so that there's a feedback loop into how the machinery really performs. And that's the type of collaboration that we need. I will close by saying that we definitely need a lot of investment on training and skilling, as Domenico said. This also is about, for example, for machinery manufacturers like my members, is about collaborating with the dealership network, dealership and distributors. this is a fundamental link in the chain that also needs an upskilling, because the way you sell and the way you service a diesel machine and the way you sell and service a battery electric machine are completely different. It needs different skill sets, need different mechanical expertise in the dealership network. And that's something that can only happen in collaboration between the OEM and the dealers.
Mm-hmm. Ricardo, what other strategies can be implemented to minimize one's environmental footprint? Did we forget something which should be more in the center? Standardization is one more a buzzword if we're talking about partnership.
Yes, indeed. But I really think that sometimes we tend to forget the lowest hanging fruits. And as machinery manufacturers, we are part of the manufacturing industry. And sometimes it really starts by making an energy audit on your manufacturing footprint and maybe installing low impact, low carbon energy sources, like, for example, photovoltaic panels on top of your manufacturing facility. And that's something that some of our member companies have done and continue to do. And sometimes it's really about the low-hanging fruit. It's the energy audits on the one end, like Domenico said, maybe more healthy food offered at the canteen. So it can really start there. As long as a company has a strategy, it really should start by the low-hanging fruit. And I know it's less innovative, maybe even less sexy to talk about them, but it definitely is where you can start.
We don't want to be sexy, we want to be effective here.
Right.
But this is a good example, as Domenico, you started with it. So we are back at the beginning. Maybe one final question. How can companies, what can they do now to make the most of the upcoming opportunities, Domenico?
First of all, a company needs to understand where it stands in its pathway towards carbon neutrality. So a company needs tools also to be able to identify their positioning and what they need to do more to accelerate their transition towards carbon neutrality. And this goes also through facilitating their lives with less reporting, or at least more easy reporting, especially from an SME perspective. President von der Leyen clearly said that the Green Deal will remain the main target. So, I mean, companies have to understand that either they start today to work on their sustainability in their internal structures, in their process, or they will be out of the market. So there is a need really to accompany the companies with tools, as I said, in order to allow them to benchmark themselves in their path. They need support, financial support. Also, we said maybe also through public procurement can help a lot. And sharing best practice. And this is also, I think, where Bauma can be important, because customers, companies need to know what are the developments, what is on the market in terms of machines. And Bauma is certainly one of the most important places where to go into this direction. And once again, we said it several times, the closer links in the supply chain. I think a combination of all this should really help all the companies.
Yeah, the companies need freedom to do their work and have time for that. Ricardo, how does Bauma contribute to this from your point of view? I mean, can you give us a taste of the solutions that will be showcased in Munich from April 7th on?
The buzz around Bauma 2025 is really, really deafening. I know of a lot of member companies of CEC that have already been engaging for months in understanding what they want to show, in finalizing the development on some of the biggest presentations that they're lining up, and the climate neutral technologies will be center stage. And I really believe that all the digital tools, all the data center tools that will be presented at Bauma will be instrumental to the carbon neutral technologies, as it should be, because digital in itself is not a goal. Digital is a tool. And the tool of the data centered solutions are really instrumental to the climate transition. So I cannot name one single or specific or a set of specific technologies that will be visible at Bauma next year, but I'm sure that they will be stunning. I know that a lot of companies are coming back. A lot of innovative companies are gearing up to an amazing Bauma 2025, most of all for climate neutral technologies.
So it will be absolutely worth it to come around and to see all those solutions being in the center. Gentlemen, what are you most looking forward to as you are at Bauma 2025 as well, for sure? Domenico.
Yeah, from the construction company's perspective, it's certainly a great opportunity, a unique opportunity to learn and to see also how machinery manufacturers and equipment manufacturers are integrating new technologies, new requirements into their products. And this allows them also, of course, to planify their investment, which is extremely important, as we said. So these exchanges will allow certainly also companies to accelerate their compliance with the environmental and sustainability requirements. It allows them to identify new opportunities for investment and also new ways of better and faster integrating all these elements, as I said, in their own structures and in their own construction processes.
So there's a lot to discover, Ricardo. What will be the first thing you'll do when you are at Bauma?
I will take the occasion to talk to as many people as possible. I'll be there the whole week, and I look forward to exchanging in person, eye to eye, with the industry people, the member companies, the visitors, and to really understand how climate neutrality will be our ticket out of the current difficult economic circumstances that the industry is going. Now, we have time to turn things around between now and April 2025. So I look forward to understanding the overall economic sentiment of the construction industry.
So very much looking forward to seeing you there, gentlemen. Thank you so much. That has been very insightful, has shown the full potential of this topic, climate neutrality. It was a pleasure to talk to you. All the best to you as you are in Brussels right now. Have a great weekend. And we, ladies and gentlemen, will continue to explore these Bauma topics with more podcasts. The next episode will focus on alternative drive concepts. Don't miss that. Thanks for listening. We hope you'll join us again. Until then, take care. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Bauma Talk is presented to you by Messe München, powered by VDMA. Bauma is the world's leading fair for construction machinery, building material machines, mining machines, construction vehicles, and construction equipment. Bauma takes place every 3 years in Munich.